to the second hour of We the People Radio. Today we're talking about South Africa with our guest, Dr. Harry Booyens. And kind of getting a lay of the land, because this is all really, it should be front page news, but it's not.
Nope, nobody's talking about it.
And Bill needs to do the sponsor, but I was just going to do it in a different order today. But
well, you do it however you, in fact, you do the sponsor. I'll let you do the sponsor.
You don't want me to do the sponsor.
You're right, I don't want you to do it. Today's sponsor.
Darn it, I was going to do it too.
Our sponsor this hour is Team Power, our local John Deere Kubota tractor dealer. They reside up in Shasta Lake, California, and they avoided getting burned down.
I was just going to say,
fire.
It didn't even get burned down.
No, they just got the smoke and the ash. But they're on Twin View Boulevard, 3119, just south of Phil's Propeller. And they have a lot of inventory, a lot of tractors in stock. Go up and see them. They make you a deal. They're working with the fire victims to get their tractors repaired and replaced. And you can also reach them on the web at readingtractors.com. Their phone number is 530-226-9226, so give them a call.
And many thanks to all of our other sponsors, Karen, Ken, and...
Oh, yeah, yeah. Very instrumental in keeping us on the air.
Yes, and we really appreciate all you guys that are jumping in and helping with the show. And sponsorship doesn't have to be a big deal. Doesn't have to be a company thing, however you like to pitch in. And we really appreciate you. Lynn, just thinking of other people. Random.
Yeah,
random thoughts.
We've got some great folks out there that help support our show every month, and we do appreciate it.
It's really nice. You can find all that information at wethepeopleradio.us. All right. Back to South Africa.
Okay. So, here we go.
Here we go.
I have fiddled my sound here a little bit. I trust it works better for folks.
It sounds really good.
I've left it to the technology to adjust the volume. Now, the picture that I've just presented you is around 1800. History gallops forward over lots of great drama that I could spend hours on but wouldn't help your listeners to understand things very much, except to say that around 1815, the British managed to create a situation where another couple of farmers, this time involving my wife's ancestors, they rose up and rebelled, and then the Brits wanted to hang them. When they did so, they got the same army to build the scaffold, and when they tried to hang the guys, the ropes broke, and you can imagine what happened to that scene, and then they simply hanged them again to make sure the job worked.
Oh, boy.
That
didn't taste in the mouth. So with that, it was out between Boer and Brit. That you do not do, because the breaking of the ropes was seen as the hand of God, and it was over. There was no further discussing. All it now needed was, a little spark somewhere in the bush. So by now we are at roughly the sixth frontier war is about to begin. The first two were between the Dutch and the black people, and the rest were between the Brits and the black people. Now, in 1820, British settlers settled in South Africa, and if you think that the British government was nasty to my own original Dutch ancestors, here's what they did to their own people. They landed them right on the frontier, on the Fish River, just to the west of the Fish River, facing this very dangerous frontier, and used them as cannon fodder against the black people if they were to attack, which they did at the end of 1834, and they murdered as far as they went. And most of the English settlers fled to the towns. At the end of this war, the British government blamed the British settlers and my own ancestral Afrikaans guys for what had happened.
Now, was this the Zulu Wars?
No, we're not at the Zulus yet. The Zulus come later.
Okay.
Give me 3 years to get to the Zulu.
Okay, jumping ahead there.
3 years and 3 minutes.
Countdown 3 years to Zulu.
So at the end of this exercise, things had turned liberal in Britain. the black people actually had missionaries who went and represented London, and my folks had no one to speak for them. At the end of this, my folks decided that's it. They've had enough. They cannot handle this ham-fisted management by the Brits any further. So they packed their ox wagons. Your guys did it with horse-drawn wagons. Ours did it with ox-drawn wagons. They loaded up their family Bibles, their families, what the furniture they had on these heavy ox wagons, and they trundled north into the unknown, which they thought to be better than living any further with the Brits. The situation was so pathetic that it was the British settlers who stood together to buy, for example, a Russian leather-bound Bible for the one trek leader. So the British settlers and my guys were getting along just fine. And they were now in the same mess together because the British government had turned out to be the enemy of the people.
Mm, okay.
So understand that the ordinary Afrikaner like me does not have any case with the British as a people. We have it with these horrendous governments they've had who have done these horrendous things in their name elsewhere. Elsewhere being where I grew up. Now, that's also why I seem to have a preponderance of British friends here.
We're losing your sound again, Harry.
Oh, no.
Sound. I'm sitting dead still.
We have him on one leg with an arm in the air, and he's holding a banana in the other hand and a pencil in his teeth.
I don't know what to do about this one. That's just the quality of stuff. Okay, can you still hear me?
Yep, there you are. You're back.
My best here. I'm sitting dead still, I promise you. I am still. Now, the guys went up to the north. The first thing they found is that as you get to the central part of the country, you enter what is best described as classic North American prairie. Holden Webster.
We lost him.
It's grass. Now, I have one question that I think I've posed before. That is, I'm sure all of you have seen National Geographic for many years. How many pictures have you seen?
That all cut out so bad.
Harry, we're losing you.
We can't make that out. Let's take a really quick break and see if we can reconnect. I'm going to recall you on Skype and see if we can make that come out better. I thought maybe I was doing something, typing. Or no,
I think it's just a connection.
We've got something funky going on here.
The good part, too.
I know. We're almost to the Zulus. Countdown to Zulu is going to take a little longer than we thought.
Let's take a quick break and do a
We'll take our break a little bit early and then reconnect.
Can you hear my voice this time? This is my fight song. Take back my life song. Prove I'm all right song. My power's turned up. Starting right now, I'll be strong. I'll play my fight song. And I don't really care if nobody else believes. Cause I've still got a lot of fight left in me.
Once there was a battle there.
In Zaire.
100,000 people there.
In Zaire.
All those people gathered there.
In Zaire.
See the rumble in the jungle there.
In Zaire.
Okay, that's some trivia.
Yeah? I could not tell you who that was.
1976? Sporting event? Boxing?
Boxing. Oh, Ali versus Foreman.
Check.
Yeah.
That was the song about that.
I'll be darned.
I know. Ooh. I was digging deep. I found another one. I've got another sporting event coming up. there's some there were some pretty good sporting events in South Africa, and they made some songs about them. So anyway, I thought I would grab those for today. All right, Harry, our signal's good now. We're good.
Okay, excellent. Apparently, Skype has come through for us. Okay, so we are now in around 1836. My ancestors, who were largely Dutch, German, French derived, have now been joined by British settlers who find themselves in the same miserable situation as my ancestors. They now understood very quickly and very easily why there was trouble with the British government. Everybody's more or less on the same side. But there's one profound difference. The British guys who had arrived were subject to British law because they'd been born in Britain. And my guys, if they were to leave the territory, were not subject to English jurisdiction or British jurisdiction. So our guys packed their wagons, their Bibles, mostly their Bibles, and they went north into what was essentially or still is the South African prairie. It is higher, like 4,000 foot and higher. It is cold in winter. It can get bitterly cold there. In fact, I have both British and Canadian soldiers on record saying they never got as cold in their lives as they did during the Boer War in that part of the world. So they went into that part of the country, and the bit I believe that you lost due to signal quality is when I sarcastically commented, and I apologize for the sarcasm, but
it comes
with being born in a place where you are under threat all the time. You have to be able to joke in the graveyard. So the point there is you've all seen National Geographic. I suggest you mail me the pictures that you have of half-naked black African tribesmen standing in the snow and frost. Please, I'd like to have those.
Yeah, that'd be a big zero.
I missed that one.
Alternatively, pay the $1,500, fly out there in winter, and how about you go and stand there half-naked for half a day at Bloemfontein in the heart of the Free State with Skype, and let me know what it feels like.
Yeah, we'll be sure and call you.
Sorry, you'd be excluded from the attire arrangement, Aaron.
Darn
talking
it.
To Bull. Bull can stand and freeze there and lose body parts. Now, so the comment is, obviously, that central part was not occupied by black people. It was open country. In fact, I have the written accounts of people who went on that trek, and they describe how they are finding entire fields of white bleached human skeletons. Because, you see, there was another factor at work. And that is that along the East Coast, a new nation had arisen from all kinds of pieces of others, and its name was the Zulu. It was led by a despotic guy called Chaka, who had recently been killed by his half-brother Dengane, and Dengane was now the chief, and he was overseeing a very martially oriented nation where a young man could not have a wife until he had either killed a lion or killed an enemy, and all kinds of rules like that. When Chaka's mother died, for example, he walked up and down the ranks of his soldiers, and if they didn't cry real tears, he had them killed. You're talking about an extreme situation, a really extreme. But those guys were probably the bravest soldiers the world had ever seen. They put together the most amazing nation, a nation that can call up an entire army in like a day. They're impressive to see how they function. Okay? So this was a war machine that no one on earth had ever come up against in a regular written history. But Prairie was a renegade Zulu guy. I'll call him Zulu. He was actually in Ndwandwe, I think. But a renegade Zulu captain who put his own nation together and trained them more or less the same way. And these two used the central prairie to fight each other. Hence, the bleached skeletons.
Wow.
So our guys went into this bleached skeleton country, and they were detected by Mtsilikazi, the king to the west, who attacked them because he perceived them as blindsiding him. If they had just checked with him, he might have let them through, but they didn't know what his rules were. And so there was a big battle with something like 5,000 of Silke and Tsilikazi's guys versus 35 men in a wagon circle. And Mtsilikazi was defeated at that battle, but he went off with all these people's cattle. And so there had to be a temporary retreat. Eventually, however, these guys gathered all their means. More people left, including my family ancestors, joined all of those, and they made their way around the north of what is now the independent mountain country of Lesotho, which is where the Sotho people live, or lived. And they made their way for the east coast of South Africa, around the top of the really high mountains. And that is where they then camped, and 100 men went off with the leader, Piet Retief, another French descendant, to negotiate land with a Zulu king. I have the signed contract. I have a copy of the signed contract. Can I make that any clearer? Admittedly, the king and his assistants made crosses because they couldn't write, but they did so in the presence of the British missionary who drew up this contract between the Zulu-speaking Zulus and the Dutch-speaking Afrikaners, and it was drawn up in English.
Interesting.
So I have that. And it says clearly that the land between the Tugela River, which is north of Durban in South Africa, the coastal city, and the Umzinvubu in the south, which is a big river far south, that they would exchange that land for these trekkers of ours, which is where you guys get the word trek from. They would exchange that land for these trekkers, helping them to regain the cattle that another black chief in those big mountains that they had passed, if they would help them get that back, the cattle back, which they did.
Now, so how much land are we talking about?
Ooh, it's probably a stretch width of 100 and something miles, I think.
Okay.
North to south and inland, a bit more than that.
Okay.
Essentially, much of the southern half of the Natal province.
Okay.
Much of the southern half of it. And it, ultimately, what happened is they did that, returned the cattle in the hands of Zulu chiefs who took it back to the king. And then they went with a celebratory group of 100 guys to go and finalize everything, sign the contract, the whole thing. And or endorse the contract, whatever the right words would be, upon which the king promptly had them impaled.
Ooh.
Oh, whoops.
Whoops. So much for the contract.
So much for the contract. So 100 guys were killed and impaled, and it wasn't good enough to just do that. They had to kill Piet Retief's son in front of his eyes and impale him in front of his eyes before they cut out his own liver and buried in the path on the way to the rest of the trekkers. Then the king sent his army to attack the women and children in the remaining camps where they had their wagon circles. Well, some of them were not in wagon circles, which led to the killing of 400 of them. But elsewhere, these guys were defeated, which is where, as I explained to the guy at our local Safeways. At the local Safeways yesterday, he's organized some English mints for me there, and I explained to him the significance of English mints, because the discarded tins of the English mints, which is the only candy that these trekkers of ours had, they used those to put individual bullets into those and then throw them into a cannonball into the mouth of their little homemade bronze cannon. They had a little homemade bronze cannon. And that way they could get shrapnel, because they realized that the cannon balls weren't doing much to the Zulu, so they created shrapnel on the spot.
Out of mint?
So out of mint tins.
Mint tins.
I'm like, what? They dumped the mints in there?
You're talking about muskets.
Sorry.
These guys poured their own lead, right?
They made big mints for that part.
Yeah.
So this is where English mints come into winning a war.
Interesting.
interesting stuff like that from real history. Okay, you can't come up with that in a story of fiction. So that kind of eventually led to the Trekkers retaliating, and they defeated Dengarn with the help of his other half brother. Can that sink in, please? One Zulu half brother king of the king helped the white Trekkers, my ancestors, to fight against his own half brother to drive him from Natal. And he fled and he was killed by the Amaswazi, by Subuza of the Amaswazi.
So at that point, the contract was made whole again?
At that point, the contract was made whole again, yeah.
Okay.
So, but here's the problem. On the very day that our guys defeated the Zulu, and this is always true and ironic like this in South Africa, it's like irony rules the place. The very day they had that big victory in which something like 3,000 Zulu soldiers die and not a single guy on the Trekkers' side. There were three flesh wounds. That's it.
Yeah.
On that very day, the British land at what is now Durban hoist their flag. And what was that bit you said about a flag earlier?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. If you go up the flag.
They hoist their flag and said, "We're back."
Wow.
Where's Arnie? Right. So, and that's what always happens, you know. And as soon as you have the Brits there, then it takes a couple of weeks before they start sending bogus letters back and forth saying, oh, these Boers are busy with slavery and I don't know what else. And in the end, the British governor at the Cape wrote in a letter that really his intent is to drive these guys away from the coast and move them to the wastes of the interior where they will be less of a burden to everybody. That's now what he wants to do to my ancestors. So most of them left and went to the wastes of the interior where they would be less of a burden to everybody.
With their men.
There, they were baptized by an American from the Rocky River County. In, what is it? I think it's Ohio, unless I'm mistaken. And he then were settled in the Rocky River County of the Natal province. So he went from Rocky River to Kliprivier, which is just Afrikaans for Rocky River.
Hmm.
And he baptized my wife's ancestors and so forth. Actually, my wife's great-grandmother was baptized by him. So, and he created the Dutch Reformed Church in those interior provinces. So that was done by an American. And now you know how the Orange Free State arose in the middle on the prairie. Other than one fight with Umtsilikazi, who didn't live there, you haven't heard of major clashes with black people. It's because they weren't there.
Right.
Back to National Geographic.
Back to National Geographic. How many freezing, half-clad tribesmen have you ever seen standing in the snow?
That is pretty crazy. We need to take a really quick break here at this point, because I don't want to cut you off in the middle of the next phase. This is a great. I mean, this is all the stuff that we never learned, actually. Wonderful. Okay, so South Africa with Dr. Harry Booyens. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Yourself up and dust yourself off and back in the saddle. You're on the front fire, everyone's watching. You know it's serious, we're getting closer, this isn't over. The pressure's on, you feel it, but you got it all, believe it. When you fold it up, oh, oh, and if you fold it up, eh, eh, tamina, mina, sangalewa, cause this is Africa. Tamina, mina, eh, eh, waka, waka, eh, eh. Mina, mina, sangalewa. time for Africa.
I just wish people could see the dancing that's going on over in Bill's chair. It's right up there with my mints. Okay, so that song.
I know some African dances.
That song. That was the song from the 2010, World Cup.
Oh.
There you go.
There you go.
Well, two sports.
How much I know about baseball.
Nice. Two sports trivia songs for you that had to do with Africa.
Yeah.
Had to dig deep on that one.
Yeah, you did.
All right. Our foolishness is over, Harry. We're back. Actually, I'm not sure it's over. We subdued it, though. Doing our best.
Well, I went and I was nice. I took the bag of peppermints from the guy at Safeways, and I have it in my hands here. You know, I can
killer peppermints.
Should be crackling like really. You can hear it. Okay, that's my celebratory rustling of peppermints in view of what happened in 1838.
Yeah, put down the mint. You're making me nervous.
Now,
yeah, put your hands up and drop the mints.
That really happened. So the Brits just moved in and took that country. There was some fighting, and our guys retreated back to the interior to go and live, as I say, in the wastes of the interior where there would be less of a burden on, quote, us British, unquote. Now, that all went fine for a while. And then one day a guy turned up with a weird shiny little stone in the western end of this waste of the interior.
Uh-oh.
And he took it to another guy who knew a little bit more about Chinese stones. And that one took it and scratched a pane of glass with it in the town of Colesberg, where my family was. And that mark is still on the window there. And he announced that this is a diamond, which they then had tested in various other places, including by the French consulate. I have no idea why that is. But, yes, it was a diamond, which, of course, leads to the following immediately very rational response. The British government announces that they believe that these Boers in the west of the interior are trying to apply slavery to some people to the west that no one seemed to know about. And therefore, the British have to rush to the rescue of these people, which they then supposedly did, and followed that immediately by moving all of those people out of the territory where the diamonds are into the face of the Amakosa people on the far southeastern coast where they don't belong, and they had the diamonds. And that's it. So whenever a second party says they're worried about what you're doing to a third party, you should smell a rat.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay? And that pattern has persisted for as long as the British spent time in Africa. They would pick a fight in that particular fashion. It would always be about some or other human right of a third party, which they would ride to the rescue of this third party and then promptly move them out and take it over. That's the pattern. And that then set the western frontier of the Prairie State, with the farmers, of course, now accidentally having found themselves on top of what was supposed to be the waste of the interior and turned out to be the diamond mines of Kimberley. Now you know where Kimberley is. It's in the part of the country that should have been part of the Orange Free State between two rivers, but there's a little piece lobbed out because the Brits did that. They wanted the diamonds. And so they added that to the Cape Colony. And the Boer were now pressed from the east, because they weren't supposed to be at the coast, and they pressed from the west, because they're not supposed to be close to the diamonds. Anyway, they carried on living their prairie life with their, I could flash back, I'd say if John Deere's were around in those days, they'd have been driving those, but they didn't have those, so they were plowing with their regular plows, and they were growing their corn and ranching their cattle, and closer to the mountains where there's a little bit of rain, they planted wheat. And so that became the breadbasket of the country. And it has been that ever since the 1850s. And it's over that period that many of my Boyan's family moved into that area. And they're in communication with me every now and then, like yesterday. And so the bit I didn't tell you so far is that when that fight happened with the Zulu, a part of these trekkers went further north, crossed the Vaal River, or the Vaal River, went to the far end of this high prairie and down the northern side of it where it turns tropical. And that is where they ran into a number of different nations, including that of the guy called Malema, who's screaming, kill the whites, kill the farmer, from the stage.
Mm.
Okay? But even then, they didn't run into the new president's people. That happened even a bit later. So the picture that you need to have is that of a huge colony called the Cape Colony, starting from the southwest of South Africa. You need to view another colony on the coast along the east coast called Natal. And then here in the middle sits the prairie province called the Free State. My contention is the following, that what used to be the old Cape Colony all the way up to the Fish River is essentially white territory, and that much of the Orange Free State prairie country is white territory. To the east of that live some of the refugee black people called Sotho, living in those mountains, and to the west live the Tswana people. To the north live all the others. Along the coast live various black people north of the Fish River. Now, if anybody listening, and including yourself, Aaron and Bill, if you have Google anywhere around, you may want to go to the Wikipedia page. And when you're in Wikipedia, just put in the languages of South Africa. It's interesting and a very revealing thing to do. Languages of South Africa. And I'll wait for a couple of seconds to tell me you can see it. So we're looking
on. It's a race.
We're looking.
I got it. There's 11.
Okay, so if you're on Languages of South Africa on Wikipedia, you roll that thing down until you get to the bottom.
Yeah.
And coming from the bottom, you'll see a first picture that shows the map of South Africa with a lot of green on it.
Yep.
That is the distribution of West Germanic languages. Whoever did that is very clever. That was his way of saying white people. and Indians and so-called colored people, who are the descendants of all the old Dutch East India Company slaves, the Khoi or Hottentot people, etc., the whites all mixed up. That's the real nasty legacy of apartheid, is what was done to those folks. Okay? And just for the record, I am a descendant of a Khoi girl, a so-called Hottentot. So I figure I have the right to call her Hottentot. And so all those people to me are Afrikaners. They just speak different languages. They are all people who were either indigenous to the original Cape, or they came there from other places and swore loyalty to Africa. You see that green distribution?
Yeah, I mean, it's 80 to 100%. So it's not just, you know, the proportion of the population that speaks a West Germanic language as its first language, the bulk of that area is 80 to 100%.
Yeah, and then as you expect, it gets thinner to the edges, very much like the Russians and the Ukrainians argue about who's who in the zoo near the border. Okay? You look at that, and where the sort of medium-colored green peters out along the coast, that is where the Fish River is.
Okay.
And you can see the agglomeration of green further north. That is the capital of Pretoria and Johannesburg. Okay.
Yeah, so obviously either the people from Africa learned English and somehow passed it off as their first language, or they didn't live there.
I assure you.
Back to National Geographic.
I could probably count the people on the fingers of one hand who are black and speak Germanic language as first language. Right, the topmost map does something else. It it by virtue of language shows you the distribution of the black nations of South Africa.
Yeah, and that's all along the eastern side.
Yeah. You see the green patch in the middle?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Though that's the prairie state, mostly covered by Sotho people. You see the gray country stuck in the middle of South Africa?
Yeah, what is that?
That is the Mountain Kingdom Independent State. Part of the British Commonwealth has always been a separate country, the true home of the Sotho people.
And so, say again, you cut out right there. The gray part is what is who?
What I'm saying is that gray little thing is the Mountain Kingdom of the Sotho.
Of the Sotho.
It has always been an independent country since the 1800s. And that's the true home of the Sotho people, the Basotho. But somehow they've run all over the Orange Free State, which is the central prairie state. So what you should do is that light green color should be painted into Lesotho as well, and they need to be asked, what the devil are you doing in the prairie state if your own country is Lesotho?
Yes.
Did people know that some of these folks who are laying claim to South Africa and want to chase the whites away have their own independent country anyway? I bet you that nobody that's listening knows that, except maybe the few South Africans. Okay? Do you see the pink people to the northwest of the prairie state? Okay, starting to encroach on the prairie state. Do you see the huge, big gray lump north of them?
Yes. Right.
That is their own country. That is Botswana, where the Tswana people have their own country. But they're all over South Africa, demanding that the whites be kicked out.
And so this keeps changing over time.
Yeah. And so what's happened is that those two nations, the Sotho and the Tswana, have basically encroached on the Orange Free State and outnumbered the whites.
Which is handy if you want to steal all their land. It's a numbers game. We have to take a really quick break here, or we'll be at the top of the hour here. We're going to be right back with our guest, Dr. Harry Booyens, and we're talking about South Africa. And I hope that if you weren't able to pull up a map during this whole thing, you'll go back, listen to this part, and pull up a map. You can find it at wethepeopleradio.us.
I'm always going to be another mountain. I'm always going to want to make it move.
Isn't that just about where the people are in South Africa? Tell you what, they're probably looking at somewhere over the rainbow at this point. So, Harry, we're in our last, 10 minutes here.
I'll pull it together.
For the people that are on that list of 195, what are their choices?
Well, So just to explain that number, on this very morning, the government plan escaped into the hands of some organizations who've published the lists of which farms are going to be targeted. Now, one would expect that those farms are in the northeast of the country, if you look at that map.
Mm-hmm.
But they've spread them all around, and my job for the rest of this day is to go and check where those farms are. We don't know what this lot is going to do. They clearly don't care about the Constitution, because they said if the Constitution is in their way, they're going to change it. And but the threat is that these folks are going to have their farms simply taken away. That is what the government said in so many words. Now, they may backtrack. They may try and put that in softer terms. They may try to execute it in softer terms. We just don't know. But you can imagine that right now, as we're speaking, the value of that land is dropping through the floor.
Well, sure. When the government government comes up and says, basically, we're going to nationalize everything and it now belongs to us, you really don't have much to say about it.
So any farmer who's looking at this list at this morning knows that basically his life as a farmer is over, because the value of his land is falling. What's he going to do to raise a loan for next year's crop? You know, you can't. I'm sorry, but
bless you.
You can't actually talk to governments and leaders who do things like this. They don't understand how things work. And it's important to look at that top map on that page, because right in the far northernmost little chip of that map, you see a light green color. That is where the president of the country comes from. And his people arrived there when the Dutch arrived in the Cape in 1652. Below him, you see an orange patch. That is the territory of the guy that is yelling, kill the farmers, from a stage all the time. So these people are yelling about it. They're all from that far northern corner of the country. And they're trying to make rules to basically wipe white people out all over the country. And they're going to get away with this because the Western media is not calling them on it. The U.S. government is not calling them on that, and I personally believe the time has come for targeted sanctions against the individuals who are perpetuating this kind of nonsense in that country. It has been done to the Russians, it's been done to the Iranian government. It is time that this is done to the individuals in the South African government who go around endangering the lives of people and go around destroying the principle of private property, which underpins the Western world.
Because these folks are completely, I mean, they're outmaneuvered. Who represents them at all, at any level?
An organization called AfriForum is the best that they have. And then they have an organization called the Suidlanders. It just means Southlanders. And that second one is more like a civil defense organization organizing points where they can gather and be safe and stuff like that. But that to me is like a plan D or C or whatever. As far as I'm concerned, there is no plan A. And the only option that I see is either the U.S. government starts nailing the South African government for being completely out of line with every norm on this planet, or the white people of South Africa have to leave the northeastern region, pull back and consolidate inside the green area that you see on that map, and hive themselves off in a formal secession as allowed by the Constitution to create two countries. The one on the west we can call the Cape of Good Hope. I don't know if you ever saw the movie, I don't know what it was called, Millennium or something, but it's where the earth goes to pieces and finally they're all rescued in big barges and they set sail for the only possible place that remains, which is then suitably the Cape of Good Hope. So to the west is the Cape of Good Hope, and to the east, as far as I'm concerned, will be the People's Democratic Republic of Azania.
Hmm. Harry, what is the population? What's the numbers of whites that are threatened by this new programming? What are we talking about?
Something like half the white population lives in the green territory, and the other half lives inside the northeastern part of the country.
Mm-hmm.
That's in terms of the spread. The white population is something like 9 to 10% of the total population. The so-called colored people are roughly the same, slightly fewer. And then there's something like probably between 1 and 1.5 million Indians, almost all in Natal, who by now must be shaking in their boots because in 1948 the Zulus chased them over a cliff so they fell to their deaths.
And so what is the population? You say 10%?
Of the whole country?
Well, yeah. I mean, if you're talking 10% of the whites that are going to be affected by...
No, I didn't say 10% of the whites are going to be affected.
They are 10%.
I said the whites in total are 10% of the country's population.
Right. And what is that number?
It's about 4.5 million.
Okay. All right.
So you're basically talking about a nation the size of the Irish being threatened with extinction.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So we're not just talking, you know.
I mean, this isn't a few hundred people. This isn't back
farms.
To the peppermint war.
Yeah. No, we're talking millions.
This is not Rhodesia, guys. This is saying you're talking about the destruction of something of the scope of Norway or Belgium or the Irish.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Good. Just put that in perspective.
And I'm telling you that the only option, if it keeps going like this, and the U.S. does not take action, the only other option is splitting that country in two, like North and South Sudan. In that case, the blacks to the south and the more Arabic people to the north. In this case, it will mean dividing it more or less along where the green is. And the end result will be, I promise you, that the bit to the east will become the People's Republic of Azania, or the People's Democratic Republic of Azania, which... at the moment, they are together only because of their joint hatred of white people and their exploitation of that. And if those whites move out of there, those guys are going to turn on one another and you are going to see something you have never seen before in your lives. When those Zulus arm and get going, the rest are going to run until their mothers can't help them.
Right.
God.
That's not going to be a pretty sight.
Ugly. All right. We are going to have to take off for today, but... I guarantee you we're going to talk about this some more. And thank you for all the perspective, actually. So now we can, people can get engaged. And I hope they do go get more information. Dr. Harry Booyans, you are always a wealth of information.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, anytime. And you've been listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. And we'll be back next week.